This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Evan Erickson. The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, including Chair Senator Lisa Murkowski, is holding a special public hearing in Bethel today. They want to hear from regional leaders and community members about disaster response, mitigation, resilience, and relocation programs serving tribal communities. The hearing is open to the public. It starts at 1 p.m. in the Blueberry Conference Room at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation Hospital and runs until 5:30 p.m. From 1 to 3 p.m., a panel of witnesses, including tribal health care and governmental representatives, is scheduled to testify before the federal committee. The full list of witnesses can be found at the committee's website at indian.senate.gov. From 3:30 to 5:30 p.m., a listening session will be open to comments from tribal leaders who can sign up on-site to participate. The hearing is the second part of a two-part hearing that began Tuesday in Anchorage with a roundtable discussion featuring tribal leaders from Kipnuk and Kwigalingok focused on disaster impacts, recovery, and resilience. In-person attendance is encouraged in Bethel. For those unable to attend, tune into KYUK 640 AM from 1 to 3 PM to catch the field hearing portion of the event or watch the live stream by visiting kyuk.org. More than 6 months after the remnants of Typhoon Halong devastated western Alaska, impacted residents are still working to rebuild their homes and lives. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski held a roundtable in Anchorage on Tuesday with Interior Department officials to hear from Kipnuk and Kwigalingok leaders about challenges the communities still face and ideas for how to move forward. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, thoughts of relocating the villages came up again and again.
When ex-Typhoon Halong blew through Kwigalingok last October, Lucy Martin sheltered in her home with her boys and her father.
Just after 2:15 a.m., I looked out the window and I saw graves rolling, graves and caskets rolling. It was a real life horror movie for me.
In Kipnuk, Village Chief Paul J. Paul says debris, sewage, and fuel contaminated the landscape as 16 family members, including 10 grandkids, holed up in his home.
Strong wind, heavy seas, waves starting to hit my house. Peeled out my outer layer of plywood from my house.
Paul teared up, his voice cracking, as he spoke of his daughter asking them to sing Silent Night, hoping for some relief as the family prayed together. As roundtable attendees like Paul and Martin spoke, Billy Kirkland listened. Kirkland is Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs with the Department of Interior.
I don't want to say excited to be here because obviously I'd much rather be here for a different situation, but we're happy to be a part of the process of healing that we have the ability to do.
Dustin Evan is Tribal Resilience Coordinator for Kwigalingok. He says before the storm hit, the village was already weighing the impacts of a warming climate, like thawing permafrost and increased river erosion.
Preliminary projections showed that Kwig would be in great risk within 10 to 20 years. However, Typhoon Halong took care of that in one night. This will not be the only storm.
Martin works with Evan and on a visit months after the storm says she noticed patches of tundra had disappeared.
When I walk on raw ground, it's like walking on a waterbed. You're just on a jello pad. The land sunk even lower. Our land is no longer safe for year-round living.
Raina Paul, the tribal administrator for Kipnuk, says an additional issue is that the state is not communicating with tribes before sending contractors in for debris cleanup and other recovery efforts.
The state has been charging forward with hiring contractors to do work in our village without consultation. This violates our tribal sovereignty.
Problems for community members extend beyond their villages. Hundreds of Western Alaskans were relocated to larger cities like Anchorage after the storm. While tribal leaders expressed gratitude to the cities for taking them in, Martin says her community members are facing new challenges.
Our people are already struggling with housing. Our children are being bullied at schools. Many of our tribal members are struggling with mental health because of the trauma we went through, and we already lost 2 youth to suicide.
Others expressed concerns over a lack of access to traditional foods and subsistence hunting opportunities. Tribal members in both Quigilingok and Kipnuk have voted overwhelmingly to relocate to higher ground, but there are barriers, including costs, as well as varying jurisdiction over state, federal, and tribal land. Raina Paul says there's currently no clear pathway for relocation of this kind.
There is no current program for relocation, and no agency that handles relocation, and no source of funding for relocation. This forces relocating communities to try to navigate very complicated processes on their own.
She proposed a pilot project to set up an interim village in rural Alaska. She says the project should be funded and coordinated by multiple agencies in collaboration with tribes where both communities can rebuild.
Both Kipnuk and Quigilingok can come together. We can support each other, heal together, be a community again. This will help give us a sense of grounding that we desperately need.
Raina says she hopes such a pilot project would set a blueprint for wider federal relocation policy. Murkowski says a similar roundtable is scheduled for Wednesday in Bethel. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
At least half a dozen families in Marshall have received precautionary rabies vaccinations. That's after community members handled puppies that had been living in an outbuilding with a dog that later tested positive for rabies. Here's a report. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation confirmed late last month that a dog in Marshall had tested positive for rabies. The dog had been in contact with an aggressive fox in the Lower Yukon River community. YKHC says medical staff were already on site to assist the community when test results came back positive for the deadly disease. As of Tuesday, YKHC staff remain in Marshall to provide vaccinations for anyone who believes they may have come into contact with the dog or the puppies. The treatment for potential exposure includes 4 doses of human rabies vaccine given over 2 weeks. If left untreated, rabies infections are fatal for humans. It spreads through bites or scratches from infected animals because the virus that causes the disease resides in saliva. YKHC says 2 other dogs in Marshall that killed the fox after it entered the outbuilding were euthanized. Those dogs were not tested for rabies. The fox was unable to be tested due to deterioration, according to the State Division of Public Health. YKHC says it is treating any untested puppy as possibly infected. As of Tuesday, it had not tested all of the puppies. City leaders say it is unclear the exact number of puppies that may have had contact with a rabies-infected animal. YKHC worked with the Alaska Department of Health's Epidemiology Section and U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to acquire the needed human rabies vaccines. The provider says it also received a donation of 100 doses of vaccine from manufacturer Bavarian Nordic. YKHC says additional staff will be traveling to Marshall in the coming days to vaccinate other animals in the community as well. The city has urged residents to avoid contact with wild animals, secure their pets, and verify that pet vaccinations are current. YKHC requests that anyone in Marshall with questions or concerns contact its Office of Environmental Health at 907-543-6420. Again, that's 907-543-6420, or the Marshall Clinic at 907-679-6226. That's 907-679-6226. Across the country this week, communities gathered in honor of missing and murdered Indigenous people. KYUK's Samantha Watson reports that on the YK Delta, where several such cases remain unsolved, dozens took to the street to march in support.
Off of Bethel's main highway, a crowd of marchers form a red cluster. They're in ruby t-shirts and hold red painted posters. Some wear crimson roses in their hair or fastened to the shoulder of their jackets. Each bright piece is a symbol of the MMIP movement. Carrie Atchuk talks to the crowd.
What do you want to say to the people out there? For our people in this community, the ones that are lost, that have no answer to what happened to them.
Each year, May 5th marks a day of awareness for the MMIP movement and remembrance for those lost. It aims to bring awareness to the high rates of violence against Indigenous people and for the historical lack of data and investigation of victims. Achek says, enough is enough.
Doi! That's what we're gonna say! Doi!
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 Achek asks for everyone to walk closely together to show their unity. Following the drumbeat, the wave of red moves together along Bethel's main road. Marcher Paul Roll says he's here to show support for a worthwhile cause.
You know, there's no excuse for so many Indigenous people to go missing for so many years, you know, year after year. So it's a little thing, but, you know, I'm here to show my support.
He's shown up annually to these marches, and so has Bethel resident Buck Bukowski.
March every year for it. I got relatives in all the villages and 50 grandkids, and I worry about them all the time. I think there's not enough justice done for the ones that got lost.
Many people hold signs that read, "Our lives matter, we are never alone," and "No more stolen brothers and sisters." Some of those signs have pictures, faces of people, of relatives. Olinka Peterson holds up a poster with one girl's face on it.
This is Elfrida Gregory. She went missing in Anchorage. We're holding it up for it. Aggie Gregory.
She nods towards some marchers in front of her. She says, "Here, when devastation happens, everybody is there for everybody. It's handled as a community, like the one she's walking as part of today."
It's part of our traditional values is to be there for people regardless of who they are, if we know them or not.
Austin Fitka carries a similar sign.
I wanted to bring awareness to Kelly Hunt and her case because there's just so much behind it that more people need to be aware of. And this is, you know, for today, I feel that this is the best way to do it.
Kelly Hunt was a 19-year-old girl originally from the village of Shaktulik near Nome. Last month, her body was found in Anchorage after she'd been missing for 4 months. Advocates say during her disappearance, not enough was being done to investigate or keep her story in the public eye.
We need to bring more awareness to our missing and murdered sisters.
In Bethel, Fitka says coming together shows a strength.
Seeing this many people walk with us, it makes the community feel a lot closer, like we're unified behind this movement. And it's like the lady that started the march today. It needs to stop. Doi.
In Bethel, I'm Samantha Watson.
This is KYUK News. I'm Evan Erickson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yuktun Ganumchit coming up.